We are ready to start Matthew chapter 10 tonight, and we're not going to go very far into it. I debated how exactly to handle this chapter. This chapter is known as the Limited Commission by many people, and I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to do with it, because this is also the chapter in Matthew where the apostles are first introduced. And that being the case, I decided that, well, let's deal with the apostles a little bit. We can't just mention their names and move on and forget about them. So we will mention them a little bit tonight. If we look at verse number 1, it says, "And when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease." Notice there was always a crowd around Jesus, and there were several people that were his followers and that were disciples of a sort, but there were 12 that he called to him specifically here. They were his 12 disciples. And we also find out that these 12, from Mark and Luke and John, tell us that these 12 were also called apostles. Now, the word disciple simply means a learner or a student of. So, you can be a disciple of all sorts of things. Somebody might be a disciple of football. They're a learner of football. Somebody might be a disciple of hunting techniques. They're a learner of hunting techniques. Someone might be a disciple of Paula Deen and want to know how Paula Deen cooks. So, you know, there any number that you can be a disciple of. Whatever you want to learn, whatever you want to follow after in any area of your life. So the term disciple is not a particularly religious designation. Now the term apostle, even, carries with it the idea of one who has been sent. And that's why these 12 specifically are called the apostles, because they are the ones that Jesus sent out first here, verse 5 tells us, and they're also the apostles, these 12, minus one and plus another, that were sent out after Jesus rose from the dead in Jerusalem. At the beginning in Acts chapter 1 and 2, we have one replaced, and they go out. They're sent out by Jesus to all the world. So they were sent, and that's what the term apostle means, one sent. And so you may find the word apostle used in terms of people who are not necessarily listed here. Barnabas, for example, is not one of these, but he was sent by the church in Antioch to go as what we would call a missionary into the world with Paul, and he was labeled, because he was sent by the church, an apostle. Now, he wasn't an apostle that was chosen by Jesus as such. He was an apostle sent by the church. And so, we don't want to get confused by that terminology. It does just mean one who was sent. In fact, Jesus himself is called an apostle because he was sent from heaven to earth to come to teach us and to be an example for us. As we look at verse 1, of course, these were the 12 that were special. Jesus gave them power to do miraculous works. Now, it's interesting. They had not yet received the Holy Spirit. They hadn't been baptized with the Holy Spirit yet. The Holy Spirit had not even come on them yet. In fact, at this point, Jesus hasn't even taught them about the promise of the Spirit yet. And yet, he gives them power to cast out demons, to heal sicknesses and diseases of all different kinds. This power apparently came from him. It was his power that he gave them. He gave them that authority and that power to be able to do these things. And it's interesting that this power was not limited to, well, you can heal somebody who's got a fever, but if they've got a broken leg, you can't do it. Or you can heal somebody who's got the flu, but if they've got cancer, you can't do it. It wasn't that kind of thing. They could heal all manner of diseases and sicknesses, all kinds. And even of those demon-possessed, they were capable. He gave them the power and the authority to cast out any of the demons. He didn't say, well now, but if somebody gets this particular demon, leave that one alone. It wasn't limited in that way. That's important for us to know. They should have had the power to heal anyone. And down in chapter 17, we're going to find an example of a case where they couldn't do what they should have been able to do. And so we want to keep in mind that he did give them that power. Verse 2, the list of the 12 apostles begins. These are the names of the 12 apostles, Matthew says. And then he lists them. They're also listed in Mark 3, verses 12 through 19, in Luke 6, verses 13 through 16, and all but Judas are listed again in Acts chapter 1 and verse 13. What's interesting is, some of them are only mentioned in these places. They're never mentioned individually anywhere else by name. There's a little bit of confusion over some of them. Let's brush over this just a little bit. Matthew's list is this: Simon, who was called Peter; Andrew, Peter's brother; James, the son of Zebedee; and John, his brother. They were brothers. Philip, Bartholomew; Thomas; Matthew the publican. Interesting that Matthew points that out about himself. Some people might have been ashamed of that, but he openly admitted it. James, the son of Alphaeus; Lebeus, whose surname was Thaddeus, it tells us; Simon the Canaanite. Canaanite, that's an interesting one. And Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. So, these are the 12 that are listed here. Now, in Mark and Luke, and then in John as well, as these disciples, these apostles are mentioned, some of the information is a little different. Some other names are given that can confuse us sometimes. Peter is first in all of them. Peter's always listed first. And the first four, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, are always the first four. The order is switched around. Sometimes James comes before Andrew, those four are always the first four. They were Jesus' closest disciples. In fact, in one situation, Philip, who's down at number five, and he's always number five, he's the kind of the leader of the second group, the second tier, if you will. On one occasion, some people came to Philip saying, hey, we want to see Jesus. And Philip didn't just take them to Jesus, he took them to Andrew. And then Andrew and Philip together went to see Jesus. So it was almost, I know Jesus didn't make them a hierarchy as such, but they kind of formed themselves into these little groups where you had this group and this group and this group. And then, of course, number nine, James, the son of Alphaeus, he's always the same as well. He's always number nine. He seemed to kind of be the leader of the last group of individuals. But it is interesting as we look at these individuals. Now, in Mark, James and John are called Boanerges. Boanerges, if you can. Kind of a weird one. It means sons of thunder. They apparently had some real tempers that had to be dealt with. On one occasion, they wanted to call down fire from heaven to consume some people because they were upset at the way they treated Jesus. Now, Thaddeus is also... Simon the Canaanite is also called Simon Zelotes or Simon the Zealot in Luke. Thaddeus is also, or Lebeus, is also called Judas, either the son or the brother of James. The word could mean either. The King James translated it brother of, but the New King James translates it, and the American Standard Version translates it, son of James. So that there was some relationship with someone named James there. And this Judas, he's often also sometimes referred to as Judas, not Iscariot. So he was the other Judas. So he's referred to that way sometimes. Simon is also called Cephas, Simon Peter. He's also called Cephas. And he's also, on one occasion, Jesus refers to him as Simon Bar-Jonah, which is the son of John. And so he had that name as well. Nicknames, some of these. And we kind of have nicknames for each other sometimes. And it can be confusing if you don't know who they're talking about. Well, who's that? So we want to look at those. Also, Matthew is referred to in John's Gospel as Levi, the son of Alphaeus. Now, there's no indication that Levi, the son of Alphaeus, and James, the son of Alphaeus, there's no indication that that's the same Alphaeus. That would, of course, make them brothers, but it doesn't say anything anywhere to indicate that they were brothers or that they were of any relation. Alphaeus may have been a fairly common name. Several of these are. We see there are two named James. There are two named Judas. There are two named Simon. So these were some common names. They weren't unusual names. Philip, Andrew, and Peter are all from Bethsaida. Most people that as I looked at this, most agree that the Nathanael that Philip brought to Jesus in John chapter 1 is Bartholomew. There's nothing else to really connect them, but there's no point in that story about Philip bringing Nathanael to him and Jesus even complimenting him, "Oh, here is an Israelite in whom is no guile." Well, who is this guy? And then you don't read about him again until the end of John, after Jesus has died, when Peter goes fishing and Nathanael's is with them. And so the indication there is that he must have been a part of the group if he was still there, because after the crucifixion, everybody else was gone. The 12 was, well, 11 at that point was all that was left, really, pretty much. So this fellow Nathanael was certainly a part of that group at that time, and he was there back in chapter 1 of John. Thomas is also called Didymus. We often hear him called Thomas the Doubter, which is kind of a shame because really Thomas was a pretty good guy most of the time. He had some very good things to say and do on the few occasions that he's spoken of. But Didymus means twin. Apparently he was a twin. Also, James, who was the son of Alphaeus, is on one occasion called James the Less, and he's also there's an indication that his mother's name was Mary. He's referred to as James the son of Mary on one occasion. And it's interesting, Judas Iscariot is almost always called Judas Iscariot, but on one occasion it's also said that he was Judas Iscariot, Simon's son. So his father was named Simon. So there you have a third Simon mentioned. Obviously Peter or Simon the Zealot were not the father of Judas Iscariot, but he had a father named Simon. Jesus had a brother named Simon. I mean, so these are some very common names, just like we have today, names that are very common ones. Of these 12, in the Gospel accounts, if we just stick to the Gospel accounts, Simon the Canaanite is only mentioned three times in those three lists, here in Matthew 10, in Mark 3, and Luke 6. We know nothing else about him except that he was a Canaanite and a zealot. And those we get from those three things. He never speaks. You know, he's never quoted as saying anything. I mean, he's part of the group when it says, you know, and the apostles did this or that. He's part of that group. But he never distinguished himself in any specific way by speaking out or saying something. Judas or Thaddeus or Lebbeus, whichever one you want, pick your name, he's mentioned four times. So one other time he's mentioned. That being the case where he's called Judas, not Iscariot. And he actually does say something on one occasion. James, the second James, the son of Alphaeus, is mentioned 6 times. Matthew, 7 times. Even though he wrote a gospel, and yet he's only mentioned 7 times by name, specifically. Bartholomew, 9 times. Thomas, 11. Philip, 14 times. James, the son of Zebedee, 17 times. Oh, did I mention Andrew, 11, like Thomas? Andrew was 11 times. And Judas Iscariot is mentioned 21 times. Not in a positive way. You know, they don't have a lot of good things to say about him, but anytime they bring him up, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Jesus, they always throw that in there when they mention him. That's kind of a bad thing to have as, you know, instead of Iscariot, maybe he should have been named Betrayer. You notice nobody names their kids Judas Iscariot. I can't imagine why. It's just one of those names, kind of like Jezebel and Ahab. You just don't find many of those names. But actually, Judas Iscariot is mentioned more often than all but 2 of them. The only 2 mentioned more often than him are John. John is mentioned 25 times. But Peter, if you don't count Judas Iscariot, who was the one who betrayed Jesus, if you throw him out, of the other 10, you got Peter, you got the other 10, and then you got Judas. But of the other 10, Peter is mentioned more than all the rest combined. He was either the most outspoken, or else he had a lot to do with Jesus and his interactions in this world. And apparently he did. He's mentioned over 100 times, about 110 times in the Gospels alone. Now if you add to that what's mentioned in Acts, I mean, there's another 50 times that he's mentioned in the first half of the book of Acts. And so, we don't know a lot about some of these guys. We know that they were his disciples. We know he chose them to be apostles. Many of them, we don't even know their occupation. We know that Peter, Andrew, James, and John were fishermen. We know that Matthew was a publican, a tax collector. But of the rest, we really don't know much about them. Except that they were just good salt-of-the-earth kind of people. They were just good common people. They were not Pharisees. They were not doctors of the law. They weren't scribes. They weren't priests. They were just good, common, everyday folks who would work hard. I mean, you think about it now, you know, I assume that fishing is probably not the kind of fishing where you go sit by the pond, but commercial fishing is still hard work. But I imagine it was even harder back then, back before they had all the machines and pulleys and things like that that did a lot of the manual labor. Can you imagine throwing a net out there, catching fish in it, and dragging that whole huge net? You ever picked up? I mean, that can be heavy. And it was hard work, and sometimes you got nothing. There were several occasions where the disciples had gone fishing, and they hadn't caught anything. That could be a discouraging thing. But you know, that was good for them, because Jesus was taking them into another occupation where they were going to be doing some hard work that was sometimes going to be fruitless, just like the fishing had been. Sometimes they were going to have great reward, but sometimes they weren't going to get much of a reward at all. And so we have to keep that in mind. Peter, we'll look at him just a little bit tonight. We're certainly not going to look at all 110 places in the Gospels that he's mentioned. And of course, some of those are overlaps. There are several occasions where Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell the same situation. And so, but even if you divide that, he's still mentioned way more than the others, because those others had the opportunity to be mentioned in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, as well as John. And John, of course, gives us more insight into some of their character and things than the other three do on certain things, but he leaves out certain things. For example, you notice as we talked about the fact that these lists of the 12 are in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but there's no list in John. John doesn't list the 12 ever in that way. He talks about the apostles, he talks about them, but he never lists them specifically. Of course, we talked about Peter's occupation as a fisherman, and that's where Jesus called him. He was throwing his nets, and he called him. He saw them casting the net in the sea, and he said, "Come follow me." He went to Peter's house. We know that Peter was married, not only from this verse, but of course we learn other things from other places. Paul talks about Cephas, or Peter, carrying a believing wife about with him wherever he went. Peter apparently didn't do the kind of missionary journeys that Paul did. We find that he is an elder in the church, which would have required him to have been more of a located type person. He would need to be localized. If he's off for 3 or 4 years at a time, it's kind of hard to be a shepherd of a flock in one town if you're not there. And so he settled down. He seems to have been in Jerusalem a good bit of the time, staying there with some of the other apostles, even after the multitude of the disciples was scattered by the persecution that Saul, later to be Paul, brought against the church in the book of Acts. He's the spokesman of the group. Most of the time, when the apostles had a problem, or when they didn't understand something, or wanted to know what needed to be done, they got Peter to be the one to go talk to Jesus about it. On many occasions, Matthew 15:15, Peter is the one who comes to him and said, "Explain this parable to us." Now, I don't know if the others were just too shy, or if they thought, well, Peter's closer to him, or if Peter was just, you know, outspoken and bold that way. But he's always the one that seems to be speaking up and asking the questions. He's also always the one speaking up, sometimes saying something profound. We talked about when we were looking at Christ's church in Matthew 16, he was the one that jumped up and said, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." Well, it wasn't long after that that he was rebuking Jesus, saying, "Oh no, Lord, you're not going to go to Jerusalem and die." And Jesus had to turn around and say, "Get behind me, Satan." I mean, just within a few hours, these events seem to take place, where he's saying something brilliant, and then he's saying something foolish. Because of Peter's ability to get himself into trouble, a lot of times we can identify with him a little more, perhaps, than some of the others. Because we've all been there. We've all said something that at one point, and thought, "Oh, wow, I really came up with something good there." And then turn right around and say something we wish we could crawl up under a rock and nobody would notice us. And we've been there. We've done that. Somebody did that during one of our songs tonight. I won't mention who. But, you know, and sometimes you say that you sing the wrong words to a song. The good news is if everybody else is singing, they don't hear you. They don't hear what you say. But anyway, we do that, don't we? We say things that we shouldn't say, that they'll get us into trouble. Peter was always the one who was ready for anything. Matthew 14, it's Peter that says to Jesus, "If that's really you, tell me to come out and walk on the water to you, and I'll do it." And Jesus said, "Come on." And so Peter got out of the boat and started walking to it. Peter was one of the ones who always got to see the special things. Peter, James, and John always seemed to be there with Jesus. They were his closest companions. He would take them up on the mountain to see what's often referred to as the Transfiguration. He didn't take the others. When he was in the garden, He took all the disciples to the garden, but then he took Peter, James, and John and went a little further with just the three of them. They seemed to be closer to him in so many ways. And you know, sometimes, even within the church, I hear people talk about, well, you know, those people are just closer than, and that's just not right. They shouldn't be, we should treat each other the same, and we're always going to have certain people that we're closer to than others. That's not a sin. Jesus was closer to Peter, James, and John than he was to the others. Didn't mean he loved the others any less, but he was just closer to Peter, James, and John. I don't know why. When you get to heaven, you can ask him, why were those three so special to you? But they were. You never read about him taking Philip, Bartholomew, and Thomas off somewhere alone. It's always Peter, James, and John. And sometimes we think that, well, if you're a Christian, you can't have a close friendship with somebody else. You've got to be the same with everybody. And that is just not true. I had a woman one time call me. There were three teenage girls. Two of them were close friends. They were all the same age in the same grade at school. But two of them were close. They were just close friends. And the other one was just kind of an outsider to them. I don't know what it was. I don't know if they had different interests. I don't know if, you know, maybe one was more worldly than the others, and so because of that they didn't get along as well. I don't know what the situation was, but the mother of the one that was left out called me and said, make them get along with her. How am I supposed to make them get along with each other? I can't even hardly make people get along with me. How am I supposed to make them get along with somebody else? How's that going to work? But she just thought we ought to tell those other two that they were just wrong to be close friends and not to have this other girl as their close friend. We can't always dictate a connection between some people. Some people are going to be friends. We think about some of the friendships throughout the Scriptures. David and Jonathan. Oh, why was it that David and Jonathan were just so close? I don't know. But there was something about them. They hit it off. And you've probably been there. There's been somebody, you just hit it off with them right away. May have been somebody else that you just didn't, and you just never did. There was just never that connection. And so we have to realize that. But Peter was that one that Jesus really hit it off with. And Jesus many times taught Peter some lessons that some of the others kind of missed. I mean, they might have heard them, but he was dealing with Peter personally. On one occasion, some people asked Peter, did your master pay the temple tax? And Peter said, well, yeah, of course he pays his tax. And Jesus said, hey, Simon, come on, I want to ask you a question. And so he starts asking him, well, you know, when people tax, do they tax their own children or do they tax somebody else? And, well, they tax somebody else. Well, then the children are free, aren't they? He said, yeah, I guess that's right. And Jesus was trying to point out that as God's son, he shouldn't have to pay a temple tax. But he said, but anyway, you go down to and throw in a line and catch you a fish, and you open that fish's mouth and you'll find the coins in there for my tax and yours. You go ahead and go pay that tax. And one of the most interesting of the miracles, go fishing for money. He didn't say go sell the fish and pay the tax. He said open his mouth up and the money will be there. So that was kind of an unusual one. But Peter was the one that was part of that. Peter was the one that walked on the water. Wasn't the others. And maybe it was because of Peter's boldness that Jesus had this affinity for him. It may have been the reason that he was closer to him. When he took Peter and James and John, Matthew 26, off a little further when he was praying before he was betrayed, when he took them off that little distance further, and he came back and found them sleeping, it was Peter that he picked out of the group, not James and John. And he said to Peter, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Now, there's probably a reason for that. It wasn't long before that back in verse 35 of Matthew 26, that Peter had said, I'll die with you. I'll follow, even if everybody else leaves you, I'll never leave you. I'm going to follow you to the end of the world. I'll die for you. Nothing can stop me. He was just so bold about it. And it wasn't long after that. In fact, the very next thing that happens is Jesus takes them out there to pray, and they fall asleep. Like, Peter, you're going to die with, you're going to die for me, and you're going to do all this, but you can't even stay awake. What a guard. He wasn't really on his toes that night. But it is interesting that Peter is also the one who denied Jesus three times. He boasted, I'll never die, and then he did. Because of that, he's specifically singled out after the resurrection. Jesus tells the women that came to the tomb, go tell the disciples and Peter. Be sure you tell Peter. Can you imagine what that might have been like for him? The last thing he did before Jesus died was to deny Jesus three times. And at that point, he didn't really understand the whole resurrection thing, and so he probably thought, I'm never going to see him again. I'm never going to get a chance to say I'm sorry. And the last thing I did was deny that I even knew him. The man who's been my teacher, my mentor, the one who I said was the Christ, the Son of the living God, and I denied I even knew him three times in a row. Yeah. Peter helps us realize that we can be human and Jesus can still love us. We can fail and Jesus will still love us. And we can come back to Him and He'll take us back. Because Peter was that guy. Do you feel like Peter sometimes? Do you feel like you're the one who has denied Jesus? Has, maybe not in word, but in your actions, you haven't been living like one of His disciples should live? Do you need to turn that around? If you'll come back to Him, He'll take you back, just like He did Peter. And not only did He take Peter back, He didn't take Peter back and say, okay, but now Peter, you're going to be the lowest of the low. He took Peter back, and then Peter was the one that got to preach the first gospel sermon on the day of Pentecost when the church began. So He didn't just take him back as a second-class citizen. He took him right back to where he was before he'd messed up, right there into his bosom. A bosom buddy again. What about you? Are you close with Jesus? Maybe you're not as close as you'd like to be. You can be as close to the Lord as you are willing to be. He's willing to allow you right into His inner circle. What are you doing to get close to Him? If at one time you were closer to Him, but you feel farther away now, He's not the one that changed. He's not the one that's moved. We talked about that this morning. God doesn't change. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. He doesn't change. If you're not as close to Him as you once were, you can move back closer to Him. It's not Him that moved away. It's you or me. We're the ones that move. He doesn't. If you need to respond to God's invitation tonight to correct any problem in your life or for the prayers of the church, please do so as we stand and as we sing.